Now on the telephone, I am joined by Linda McGivney-Nolan, who is the optometric advisor to the Association of Optometrics in Ireland, the AOI. You're very welcome, Linda, and thank you for joining us on Lifeline.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Linda, can you tell our listeners what exactly an optometrist, if I'm even pronouncing it correctly, does?
Yes, you are, optometrist. Okay, so optometrists are, I suppose, what you really call primary eye care practitioners. So these are the people that you go to have your eyes tested. So our scope of practice would include testing your eyes to see if you need glasses, to check your vision, checking the health of the eye, the front of the eye, the back of the eye, checking for conditions like glaucoma, cataracts, and fitting contact lenses. So we'd be kind of the gatekeepers for eye care in the community.
Right.
So anytime you go to an optician's to get your eyes tested, that eye examination will be carried out by an optometrist.
Got it. Okay. And then just one other piece of confusion in my particular case. What's the difference between an optometrist and an ophthalmologist?
Ophthalmologist. So an ophthalmologist is a doctor. They're a medical practitioner. So there are generally two types of ophthalmologists, surgical and medical. So a surgical ophthalmologist is the eye doctor that you would go to see getting cataracts done or surgery done, or if your eye needed surgery or, you know, had a significant problem. Medical ophthalmologists are people who will treat an eye problem with, I suppose what you say, with medicine, either with injections or special types of drops. So oftentimes if you had glaucoma, for example, you might be seen by a medical ophthalmologist, or if you had AMD, you know, some of the procedures are done by medical ophthalmologists, where a surgical ophthalmologist will perform surgery.
Got it. Okay, Linda. So, like all hospital waiting lists, I see from your report that the outpatient waiting list continues to increase for eye care at an alarming rate.
Mm.
What do you think the root of all this is?
Well, I mean, first, I think the main problem of, God, you know, what's the root of anything in this country? It's multiple, you know, years of doing the same old, and
sure,
not changing. And, you know, and that doesn't work in a modern society. We're not good at addressing change. But basically, there are more of us. We're living longer. Once you get over the age of 50, your risk of eye problems increase. So risk of developing cataracts, glaucoma, age-related macular degeneration, all increase. The other thing is, as we get older, our risk of having heart problems, so systemic conditions like heart problems, cholesterol, diabetes increase, and all of those will have side effects on
yes,
the eye. So basically, there are more of us living longer with more eye problems. And
got
those
it.
Eye problems need to be seen, you know, because they're all going to, obviously, there is a threat of visual impairment or vision loss.
Got it. Okay. And Linda, are there two waiting lists? Like one waiting list for people waiting for an inpatient procedure, and then a separate list for those waiting for an outpatient procedure.
So it's not really, the outpatients are kind of like a mix. There's people who are waiting to get onto the inpatient list, and people who are on outpatient for ongoing care. So there's, I think, currently about 41,000, nearly 42,000 people on the outpatient list, and then inpatient would be people who need to be admitted for a procedure. So there are kind of, there are two lists. So at the end of July, there were 10,400 people awaiting inpatient procedures and 41,600 on outpatient.
So basically that's 51,000, 52,000, give or take.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of...
So it's the second largest waiting list in the country. And, you know, obviously the impact of not being able to see is huge.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you can't see, it affects your ability to drive. Your independence. So all the studies show that visual impairment causes increased risk of falls, depression, early admission into a nursing home. You know, it impacts massively on the quality of life. So it's something that really needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. And what basic reforms would you suggest are needed to reform Ireland's eye care services? Now, we agree the population is growing old and ageing, and the demand for your services can only increase. But what would you do in the short term just to help things improve?
Well, I think two of the biggest waiting lists are cataract surgery and children's waiting list. And these are two things we can help with. Now, I always say we are not eye doctors, so we can't do the surgery bit We're even limited in terms of some of the treatments we can do. But what we can do, and what's being done in other countries, is help to reduce this waiting list. So Ireland is following a really, really old model of eye care that all the other countries are moving away from. And we're still stuck in our same old rut, and we're really reluctant to change. And the things that we can do, for example, in the northwest of the country, we have a post-cataract scheme. So if you had your cataract surgery, you go out into the community and your optometrist takes up your post-surgical care. Now, you'd be visiting the optometrist anyway after you've had your cataract surgery, because obviously you're going to need to change your glasses. So what we have done in the northwest of Ireland, and this scheme is ever increasing with new counties coming in on it. So the optometrist does the post-surgical checkup and the eye test. And we have a really strict protocol that the optometrist has to follow when they see the patient for the eye examination. And then they also have, we have an IT link so that the optometrist can go online and access through a platform the patient's medical record in the hospital and update all their findings. So it keeps everything up to date. And it's linking the community in the hospital using IT. So, like, absolutely brilliant idea. Works really well. We've had that running since 2010. And it's evidence-based. It's been running. It's been regularly audited. We've had no issues with it. And we would like to see this rolled out. So while we can't do more cataract procedures, we can take the patients out of the clinics and the hospitals. Because everywhere else, once you've had your surgery done, you have to go back into the hospital.
Right.
Okay? Doesn't make sense. So what we're saying is, like, free that clinic time up, free those doctors up so that they're not doing what optometrists can do. Get the patients out into the community for their follow-up care and free up those clinic time for cataract or other, you know, AMD clinics, whatever else. So that's one thing we can do. The second thing we can do is we have an awful lot of children in the hospital system who could be seen by optometrists in the community. And this is something that, you know, the children can come to us privately. I am a pediatric optometrist. I see lots and lots of kids every day.
Right.
And that's something we're allowed to do as well. It's within our scope of practice. But again, in Ireland, we have this, where there's this brainwashed idea, and, you know, that every child has to go into the hospital for an eye test, which they don't have to.
Right.
Okay? Okay. So you've got children who are waiting up to 3 years to see an eye doctor when they could be seeing an optometrist. But the problem is, if mum or dad bring them to the optometrist, they have to pay it. It's not covered by the state.
Yes, okay.
So there are two areas that we can literally start with immediate effect addressing some of these issues and just giving that little bit of breathing space to allow for, you know, changing other areas in the eye care health system. And from a financial perspective, not only does it make common sense from a scope of practice perspective, it saves money. And we estimate that doing this could save over 30 million. So it's kind of a win-win, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Indeed. And you didn't even mention to the fact that you're also freeing up beds in a hospital as a byproduct of what you suggest. And I hate you to apportion blame, but there must be some individual absolutely digging their heels in. Is it the old school tie of consultants that you're intruding in our area, or is it a HSE issue? Or
I often get asked this. I think it's a reluctance to change. And yes, I do think that some of our colleagues in ophthalmology are reluctant to let go or to change.
Yes.
And there are concerns that, are we able to do this? And yes, we are, and it's being done everywhere else. I mean, we are regulated, we are insured, we're trained in Ireland, for God's sake. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
They educate us here. It's 4 years of training to become an optometrist. It's not inexpensive to train. It's probably one of the most expensive courses, because there's only 24 of us trained a year. And, it's, you know, you need quite a high, you need quite a lot of lectures per numbers of students compared to, sort of, say, a lecture hall of 300 students in one lecture. You'd have one lecture to maybe 10 students in optometry. So, you know, I think that there has to be a paradigm shift in the way our profession is viewed.
Yes.
And I would hope that some of our colleagues in ophthalmology would be very supportive and would like to see this come in. But I think that, I suppose, they need more reassurance that this change is important.
Yes, well,
and safe.
with a waiting list of 52,000, I think to call it, it's a vital change at this stage. Now, I see also that I see also that you have another plan, which is called a triaged pathway of routine public care. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about this?
Okay, so this is something that is done in a lot of other countries, and it's done in the UK to great effect. Like Scotland has a down to a fine art. So basically, you present for your routine eye examination with your optometrist who identifies an issue. So say, for example, it's high pressures, because this is quite a
yes,
good example.
Okay.
And we say, okay, your pressure's a bit high. We do a field test. Yeah, that's a bit suspect. But we don't really need to refer you in straight away. So we hold on to you and we monitor that, and we would have a protocol. So we triage the patient. So we say, you know what, this patient, we're okay to hold on to that. We'll monitor that according to these evidence-based protocols in the community. Whereas the other patient, yeah, we don't like the look of that, we'll send you on in.
Yes.
So we triage the patient and work out where they need to go. So sometimes it might be into secondary care, so like a community eye clinic, or into the hospital. And then you would have a flow, a pathway of information between the three levels. So there's some really great examples of these schemes working. So, you know, patients with glaucoma or potential glaucoma, or where there's a family risk of glaucoma, being looked after in the community, and those that need the care being sent into the hospital.
Yes.
And those that are treated and stable coming back out into the community and being managed by the optometrist. But as I said, this is all done with very strict protocols. So, for example, in the UK, all of this is worked under what they call the NICE guidelines, N-I-C-E. And these are guidelines which are updated every year and constantly researched. And they're evidence-based guidelines about what is the best methodology of caring for these patients. So another one, another example would be AMD. 1 in 10 of us are going to develop AMD, age-related macular degeneration, over the age of 50. Okay,
right,
if you're
okay.
a smoker, that risk is even higher. So again, we see a patient who's at risk, you're over 50, you've got some changes. I mean, currently, if we want to see that patient again, they either have to come to us privately or we have to send them into the healthcare system, which is ridiculous. The vision is good, the back of the eye is stable. So again, what we want is a triaged pathway of care. So we can say, we're going to hold on to that patient, but the state has to pay us, because this is not the situation at the moment, to monitor that patient
right.
until such time as they need to go into the more expensive secondary or tertiary level of care.
Yes, and that leads me to my next question. Is the lack of funding for a national eye care programme at the root of the problem of these waiting lists?
Well, from what I gather, there have been funds ring-fenced for this, so I don't think it's really at the root of the problem. I think it's just a reluctance to change. It's a reluctance to address a paradigm shift.
Right.
And like that eye care program has been changed so many times. I don't even know what's happening with it at the moment myself. The eye care program was supposed to be looked at after the primary eye care review. The primary eye care review finally came out. I think it was earlier this year, and we still don't seem to be seeing any movement. Now, we've spoken with the HSC, and they are amenable to change and making the change, but it's trying
yes.
to getting that, trying to get that change, that buy-in at all levels seems to be the difficulty.
Right. So, am I right in saying that it is really bureaucracy that's a good bit of this, coupled with the desire to hold on to one's own territory and not move away from the way things always have been done and they're fine?
Yeah, I think that it's a multiple of things. And I think, you know, you've got to understand as well, within the hospitals, they've got to get their ducks in a row as well. They don't have enough space. They don't have enough theatre staff. They have theatres, but they can't staff them. You know, we've heard the stories about theatre lists being cancelled because they've no
yes.
to carry out procedures. So I suppose as well, there is a reluctance. And, you know, I can kind of understand this. They're saying, well, you're not taking our money. You're not that. We want to get us sorted out here. We need this sorted out. There's no point in sorting that out. But as I said, we really need to sit around the table and look at it and say, right, okay, how can we start, you know, addressing this issue with immediate effect? And the thing is, we have two things that are, you know, can be addressed.
Yes.
They're a win-win and they can be done with immediate effect. And then, you know, I always think with these things, when you start with one area, everything else will start to follow in behind.
Yes, okay. And
Linda,
Who's
going
what's
to make that jump?
and Linda, what's the position with regard to medical card payments to yourselves in particular for these
Oh,
people?
God. Well, yeah. If you hold a medical card, you're entitled to an eye examination. And if you have PRSI, you're entitled to an eye examination. And these
Right.
are covered. So, you know, people talk about free eye exams. They're not really free. They're just covered by the state. The state, someone still has to pay for them. So if you remember with the FENPI legislation, there was cut back on all the payments to optometrists.
Yes.
I mean, we're still being paid, you know, same as we were, I'd say, 20 years ago. And when I qualified, I remember the PRSI, Medicare payment for an eye test, was £19. Okay? I think it's
Yes.
€22 now. Okay?
Right.
That wouldn't pay to switch the lights on. I mean, some of the equipment, people have, a lot of optometrists have OCT machines. That's 57,000. The fundus camera is 20,000. To say nothing of your staff,
Right.
your,
Sure.
You know, your insurance, all those other things. So people want the best of eye care when they go in for their eye test. But that costs money. And €22.50, whatever it is, doesn't cover that. So the PRSI, optical benefit, was brought in to, well, it was basically restored in line with pre-austerity levels in,
Right, okay.
last year. But not only that, they brought in new payments. So if we wanted to see a patient for follow-up, or for other than an eye test, there were allowances made for that, so you didn't have to wait the 2 years. But the HSE payment, medical card payment, is still at the same austerity level, and it's frozen under FENPI legislation. So in order to move forward and do all of the things that need to be done, that's going to have to be changed as well. And, you know, for example, if you're in the south of the country, if some of my colleagues there see a patient who has a cataract and they're saying,
Yes,
right, well,
yes.
you know, your vision's going down. I'm going to need to see you in 12 months to check that that's still okay. That second eye test cannot be claimed in the medical card because it's under 2 years. Whereas in other parts of the country, that's not a problem. So the
Right.
HSE, there's like very, there's an inequality of access depending on where you live.
Oh, Lord, I hear so much about the HSE and its structures and its management and its procedures that I think there must be something major that somebody is just going to have to take the bull by the horns and just...
Oh, I think so, because certainly, you know, I deal with this when in my job with the AOI nearly on a daily basis when I'm in there, and I get calls from members in some parts of the country where they're not getting paid for eye tests, or even in our post-cataract scheme. You know, we had situations where they were being told, we're not going to pay you for changing this person's glasses because they were seen only last year.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But they've had a cataract operation in the meantime.
Oh, sure.
Some, and it just depends on where you live. And you know, what the you know, whoever's authorising, I suppose, whatever mood they're in. But there seems to be no overall overriding policy on this. It really
Right.
seems to depend on a local level as to who's there on the day and how they're feeling.
Wow, okay. Now, I know that the AOI have already made a pre-budget submission for the 2019 budget. So where could an interested party have a look at this?
If you go onto our website, aoi.ie. Okay.
Super, okay.
www.aoi.ie, you can see our pre-budget submission. And everything in that submission is evidence-based. So we're not looking for anything that's airy-fairy, that isn't being done elsewhere, that hasn't been costed, budgeted, and that does not make sense.
Right,
what
okay.
we want to, as I said, we are seeing these people anyway. We want the government, the HSE, the Department of Health to do is to make use of this resource. You are training optometrists. We are expensive to train. And we are losing optometrists, like we're losing doctors, over to the UK because they don't want to stay here because they're not practicing to the fullest level that they're being trained because of the policy, the way things are done here.
Well, all I can say, Linda, is everything you said this, today on this on our interview makes an awful lot of sense to me. It just anyway, some people say that what's called common sense and truly isn't all that common. But anyway, Linda, is there any point not mentioned that you would just particularly like to highlight yourself in relation to our in relation to our chat?
No. I think you know, I suppose really just from an eye care perspective, I'd like to remind your listeners of the importance of having an eye examination every 2 years, and particularly if you're over 50, that there is the it's very important, because the earlier we catch something, the easier we can deal with it, and it gives us more time to get you into that system. Because when you do get into the system, and there's, we have some very, very fine eye doctors in this country, it's just getting access to them. And then in terms of children's eye care, I know there's waiting lists, but I would also say if you have a child and you're concerned about their eye test, their eyesight, remember 80% of what a child learns is through their vision, and 20%, it's estimated, of children have visual issues. Nice. From birth right up. And your optometrist, your local optometrist, is qualified to look at this and identify, is this something they can deal with through glasses, or is it something that needs referral on? So don't wait around. An eye test isn't that expensive.
Got it. Okay. Well, listen, Linda, listen, time has caught up with us, and thank you very much for joining us on 90.3 Near
it's
FM.
It's a pleasure.
And I look forward to speaking to you again in the near future, and when I hope...
Well, hopefully with better news.
You'll be telling... Yes, that you'll be telling me that some of the seriously clever and common sense suggestions that you've made on the show have been implemented, or at least are in process. So thank you very much, Linda.
Such a pleasure, and thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Linda. Bye-bye.